Sapientia, O angel of wisdom, O Sophia, you encircle circling. Kve circuien circuisti, you encircle circling. These are the lyrics translated from Latin to English from Sapientia, the song Sophia's Journey just sang so beautifully. Hildegard says, O Sophia, you encircle circling. Understanding, comprehending everything, your loving wisdom flows like the sap in the trees, nourishing life with the food of truth, uniting all on a living spiral pathway. Her words are so rooted in this physical earth, the beauty of the natural world. Three glorious wings, she tells us that Sophia has. One soars through the realms of light. Another one exchanges fluid wisdom with life on earth. Sudat, fluid wisdom, that sweat. One of these glorious wings exchanges sweat with life on earth. And the third wing flies through all creation with ecstatic joy. Praise be as is your due, O Sophia. You encircle circling. And a circle is a boundary. There's inside the circle, and there's outside the circle. And Hildegard opens it up here. You encircle circling wisdom, uniting all on a living spiral pathway. So we will be looking at the circle motif today in the visions of Hildegard and in Unitarian Universalism. What's inside the circle? My relationship with Hildegard of Bingen began in 1994.
Underneath all the text, all the sacred psalm and canticles, these watery varieties of sounds and silences, terrifying, mysterious, whirling, and sometimes gestating and gentle, must somehow be felt in the pulse, ebb, and flow of the music that sings in me. My new song must float like a feather on the breath of God.
I was taken by this quote, this vibrational and musical religious ecstasy. I built a webpage about her in 1994. So that tells you a couple things, maybe how old I am, that I'm an early adopter of technology and the internet, and that I've now been in relationship with 20 years with Hildegard. I continued living with Hildegard in my heart through the Hilde Girls, a community of singing, spiritual healing through the music of Hildegard, led by classically trained singer and visionary Susan Lincoln. It's where I learned to sing Sapientia, and I continue to be moved by the theology of that song. It was in Hilde Girls that I learned how healing music is. I think it is one of the reasons that being a part of a religious community is literally healthy for us. Studies bear this out. When you're a member of a religious community, you live longer, you're happier. And I think singing every week is part of that. Our internal organs are bathed in harmonious vibration. Our chests and our torsos open up. It is healthy for us to sing together, physically and mentally and spiritually healthy. And I suspect Hildegard knew this. So who is Hildegard of Bingen? 12th century abbess in Prussia before it was Germany. In a time hostile to women, when the Catholic Church began its requirement of celibacy for priests, they were getting rid of women and children, married priests were out. One scholar said, priests' wives and children were reduced to the status of slaves for compliant bishops. Waves of heresy were sweeping the church, accompanied executions. Hildegard was the 10th child in her family, and she was tithed to the church. She was given to the church when she was probably 8 years old. And she was simply remarkable. She was known for her music and composing, her botanical and medical works. Throughout her life, she was honored and consulted by royalty and church patriarchs. She is considered to be one of the most accomplished persons, male or female, in the whole Western Christian tradition. So this image and the other images that I'll use of her visions come from Matthew Fox's book, Illuminations. I'm grateful that our minister emerita, the Reverend Catherine Harris, purchased the 35mm slides from this book so that we could use them today. This was many years ago that she did this. I had them digitized for this. So Hildegard struggled with her health throughout her life. And Matthew Fox frames it as a breakthrough from her oppression. She struggled with passivity, with being without voice, frustrated and physically sick. And she had visions. And this image reflects her experience of heaven opening, and a fiery light of exceeding brilliance came and permeated my whole brain and inflamed my whole heart and my whole breast, not like a burning, but like a warming flame, as the sun warms anything its rays touch. Fox says that her breakthrough, her final willingness to write down her visions, is important not only to Hildegard, but to all oppressed peoples. For it was art, that is self-expression, that was the ultimate form of healing for Hildegard. So we're going to advance the slide one. Here we go. Here we can see her better with her writing tablet and her visions flowing into her. And she's working here with her devoted confidant and secretary, Volmar, who convinced her to write her visions down and worked with her for the 10 years it took her to complete her first book, Scivius Via Domini, or Know the Ways of the Lord. Here's one of her vision mandalas. Hildegard called this On the Articulation of the Body. This image of the tree of life in the universal cosmos shows the seasons of human life through the seasons of the year. So much of her imagery includes the breath of life, the winds of the cosmos, the music of the spheres, and the connection to the natural world. And there she is, down in the lower left corner, faithfully transmitting this vision. Now we're going to get a close-up here. You can see a little bit better the seasons of a person's life going around this sphere inside, cultivating and harvesting throughout the four seasons of the natural earth. Hildegard created the Latin word viriditas, which means greening power. She lived in the lush Rhine Valley and believed deeply in the healing and restorative powers of earth and growing things. She wrote this meditation.
I am the one whose praise echoes on high. I adorn all the earth. I am the breeze that nurtures all things green. I encourage blossoms to flourish with ripening fruits. I am led by the Spirit to feed the purest streams. I am the rain coming from the dew that causes the grasses to laugh with the joy of life. I call forth tears, the aroma of holy work. I am the yearning for good.
In this religious vision of our physical earth, Hildegard brings together art and science and religion. That is one reason why I find her so compelling for Unitarian Universalist context. She was scientific. She was a pharmacologist. She cataloged the botany of her region, their properties, and their healing remedies. She was distinguished both as a medical writer and as a healer. You encircle circling, she says, of the goddess of wisdom. Which brings us back to our original Unitarian Universalist logo. In 1961, when the Unitarians and the Universalists culminated the centuries-long dance they had been dancing, whether to join together or not, this was their first logo. The flaming chalice in the center with two overlapping spheres, each representing the distinct religious tradition, Unitarianism and Universalism, close and now overlapping. So the sphere, the circle, is a universal symbol of unity and of boundaries. What's inside the circle and what's outside the circle? The Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker, one of our contemporary theologians, wrote about the challenge of Unitarian Universalist theology in an article entitled, Keep the Circle Whole. She was responding to the too common and erroneous view that, as a Unitarian Universalist, I can believe whatever I want, right? So that's actually not true. You cannot believe some things and still remain within the circle of Unitarian Universalism. Both traditions were founded in the freedom of religious belief, the Free Church movement. There is no creed to which our new members needed to sign on to in order to join this congregation. We covenant instead. We make the sacred promise to walk together in religious community.
We don't have to think alike to love alike.
That phrase, we don't have to think alike to love alike, is attributed to Francis David, the founder of the Unitarian Church of Transylvania in the 1500s. He died in prison for his heresy because he didn't believe in the Trinity of the Catholic Church. But that phrase, we don't have to think alike to love alike, that says it pretty well for us. We in this room, right here today, embody a wide spectrum of religious belief. Our hearts might resonate to Hildegard of Bingen. They might resonate to Carl Sagan, liberal Christians and humanists here in the same room. We don't have to think alike to love alike. But does this mean we can believe anything? No, it does not. Rebecca Parker sets out four things you cannot believe and still legitimately call yourself a Unitarian Universalist. Within our overlapping circles, we do not accept the belief that God is the all-powerful determiner of everything that happens, such as that there is no exercise of human freedom. We don't believe in predestination. What we do matters. The actions we take, they matter. You cannot hold on to the view that there will be an ultimate separation of the saved from the damned, in which the good are rewarded with eternal bliss and the damned are punished with eternal suffering. Unitarian Universalists believe that all souls are worthy and have inherent dignity. You cannot consider yourself a Unitarian Universalist if you believe that one religion encompasses the exclusive final truth for all times and places, not even Unitarian Universalism. We know that revelation is not sealed. And finally, a belief that does not fit with our faith is that salvation is to be found solely beyond this world. We don't believe that. The ultimate is present right here, right now. Salvation in this life. Our actions matter. This world, this life, says Rebecca Parker, these bodies are the dwelling place of the sacred. Our faith holds to seven principles. In our gray hymnal, Singing the Living Tradition, right in the front are the seven principles listed with the six sources of our religious authority. So you don't have to pull this out right now, but get to know them. They're here every Sunday, our seven principles and our six sources. So recently, UU minister Ian Riddle graphically interpreted the seven principles, and a seminary colleague of mine, Kimberly DeBus, created this graphic, which I love. Part of what I love about it is the first principle is in the center. So highlighting our two favorite principles, which is the first and the seventh. So the first is in the center, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And it seems right to me where it is and the relationship to the rest of the principles. It's rooted in our individual lives, and perhaps it represents the challenge of individualism within religious community. So our beloved seventh principle, respect for the interconnected web of all existence of which we are a part, comprises the outer circle, encompassing all other principles within it. And I imagine that outer circle to be diffuse with outer edges going beyond our planet, beyond our universe, our current knowledge base, to that wider infinity that we cannot comprehend. So we are in that circle, you and I, with our different beliefs, with our human hearts beating as one. We are contained within the circle of Unitarian Universalism. So here's one final Hildegard image. This is the representation of her vision, the choir of angels. Of course, for Hildegard, angels would be in a choir. They would be singing together. They would be creating gorgeous harmonic vibrations throughout all creation. This mandala represents all creation as interdependent and celebrative, revealing the mysteries of life and love and all existence, the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. So let me tell you about the ending 2 years of her life. When she was 81 years old, Hildegard took confession from a local nobleman just before he died, and he was then buried in the convent cemetery at Rupertsburg. Well, as it turned out, that man was on the outs with the bishop, the local bishop, who ordered Hildegard to remove his body from the cemetery. And Hildegard refused, believing that his confession was true and that he belonged in that consecrated ground. The bishop sent his men to remove the man from the cemetery since Hildegard wouldn't do it. When she heard they were coming, as that circle was tightening around Hildegard and her abbey, she broke the circle open. She found help from the goddess of wisdom who encircles circling. Hildegard and her people took off all the headstones in the cemetery, and then they tilled the surface ground. So when the bishop's men arrived, they could not see where the recent burial had taken place. So in a time when most people did not live past the age of 50, here was Hildegard at 81, standing up to the Catholic Church in this way. She did suffer for this act. The abbey was placed under an edict of silence. She and her nuns were forbidden to sing. Forbidden to sing. Hildegard said, "Without song, we are so many desiccated women." Her song, which floated like a feather on the breath of God, was silenced for a year. She did prevail. That edict was lifted before her death. Ultimately, she was not silenced. In 2012, Pope Benedict XVI named her a doctor of the church. Not quite a saint, but in very good company with other doctors of the church, such as Augustine and Jerome and Thomas Aquinas and Teresa of Avila. Hildegard encircles circling, uniting all life on a living spiral pathway. I claim her for Unitarian Universalism. Namaste, and blessed be he.